it disturbs our equanimity, it disturbs that. But as well as it often brings us into afflictive mind states, which are painful, right? Third, some of them cause us to act out, right? In ways that are fundamentally harmful for ourselves, or sometimes we act out in ways that are harmful for others. So this capacity, this is what he's talking about. This is when you read it, you realize he went through 2 years of struggle, right? You know, in which he really struggled for the first time in his life with those dark places within him that had always been constrained, you know, but now, and again, I think because of what had happened in Vietnam, that he was, you know, he was all shook up. But also he was in a totally different environment, you know what I mean, where a lot of the constraints, and he wasn't known, he was really free to kind of explore himself, you know. And if you read the book, you'll see he just really went, wow, I'm just letting it all go. You know, everything I thought was right, everything I saw was wrong, everything I thought who I should be or who I shouldn't be, I'm just letting that all go. Right? Quite courageous, and really find out who I am. So we know, though hidden, they're in our consciousness, and they will come up when they're triggered. And we have lots of different, everybody has their own triggers, but they will come up and they will disturb us. And eventually, after they wreak their havoc, either just inside us or around us, eventually they will what? Come back down. And for many of us, that's the way we live. We never know when we're going to be ambushed, do we? We never know when all of a sudden, out of nowhere, you know, we're going to be disturbed. And especially, it's often very disturbing for us who have spiritual aspirations, or whatever you want to call it, you know, they often disrupt and disturb, you know, the way we want to be in the world, the kind of person I want to be inside, the way I feel inside myself, the way I want to relate to others. We find that that's constantly being, you know, the rug gets pulled out of us. And then we put ourselves back together, right? And we go on, and then it happens again, and again, and again. And we go, oh, well, that's just the way I am. That's just the way it is. But it isn't. As he says, it's because these snakes, phantoms, other unsavory creatures, they dwell within us. They are part of us. If we want freedom, and in Buddhism, freedom, you know, is not just the right to vote. So it's not the social freedom, you know, that those of us who, you know, who are used to democracy know. It's a different, it's an inner freedom. You know, we know about an outer freedom, you know, freedom to have our own views, to vote for what we want, you know, we know those kinds of rights and freedom. But inner freedom means that I am no longer bound, I'm no longer imprisoned by myself. I'm free. I'm free to be who I want to be. I'm free to be who I am. I'm free to move through the world with openness and equanimity and curiosity. You know, I'm free. So if we want freedom, if we don't want freedom, then who needs it, right? But if we want freedom, we must invite these phantoms up to our conscious mind and not fight with them. But not like the old man who tried to kill the snakes. We need to befriend them. If we don't do that, they'll trouble us every day. Okay. So this is a very important part of our practice, our mindfulness practice, which we just kind of touched on when I just had you kind of watch your thoughts. Because usually our minds are very disturbed by our thoughts. Have you ever noticed that? You have angry thoughts and you get what? What? Angry. Oh, angry thought. I'll jump right on it. I'll milk it for everything I get. Then we get a hurt thought. They hurt me. And we'll jump on that one, and we'll milk that one, and we'll feel bad, right? I mean, there are all kinds of thoughts and mind states that arise, and we just jump on the bandwagon and get carried away. So we have to learn to befriend them. So that talks about relationship, right? So when you have a friend, anybody have a friend? All right. When you have a friend, what is your relationship with your friend? Just shout it out. What's your relationship with your friend? Friendly. You're friendly, which means you're, this is not profound. You're friendly, right? You're comfortable with them, right? You accept them. Are they always wonderful? No. Sometimes your friends are a pain in the you know what, right? Or sometimes anybody have friends who go through stuff? Right? They're really angry, they're really upset, they're really sad, they're really anxious, they're scared. You know those kinds of friends? Okay. When they show up that way and they're your friend, do you walk away immediately? Do you tell them to stuff it, you don't want to hear it? Is that what you say to your friends? You say, oh, you're a downer, I don't want to be around you. I mean, we laugh, but we don't do that, do we? You know, we take our friends as they are. There are many things we enjoy about them, true, but they have their stuff. But because they're our friends, we are willing to be present to them. We don't turn them away, nor do we turn away from them. Is that clear? We are not friendly with ourselves. Is that clear? And we all can learn how to be it, because when I just said, has anybody here ever had a friend? Everybody sort of said, yes. And when I asked, are all your friends just perfect beings? No. Do they ever have their lots of stuff? Yes. Are you able to be present to them when they're stuff and try to be helpful to them? Yes. So we all know how to do it. This is not an incredible skill. You know, people always say, well, what's the technique? Give me the technique. You already know how to do it. The one thing we don't know is what? How to do it with ourselves. We never thought of that. And we never thought that learning mindfulness and awareness and the ability to observe objectively, right, are the keys to doing that. Right? So if I am mindful, I am aware when I'm drinking tea, I'm aware how the cup feels in my hand, right? I'm aware as I bring it to my lips. I'm aware of whatever this is called and the way it tastes, and you know, I'm just present to it, right? That's how I know that I'm drinking tea. I'm present to it. So learning to be mindful, first we learn in these more objective, simple ways, but really it's a skill that we then want to bring to, that we learn how to be present to ourselves. That we can be present and aware and hold and name. So if you said to me, Fred, what are you drinking? I would say, I'm drinking tea. I know it. Right. In the same way, can you say, I am aware that resentment has arisen in me. Simple. I'm aware that anxiety has arisen in me. Simple. I'm aware that sadness has arisen in me. I'm aware that anger has arisen in me. I'm aware that fear has arisen in me. In the same way, I'm aware that happiness and joy and, you know, lots of things. But that capacity to be totally open to the field of the experience of what it's like to be me. Now, the experience of what it's like to be me, just put in, you're me. Because each of us has their own unique experience of what it's like to be me. Why don't we stop for a moment? Just close your eyes. And in this moment, ask yourself, in this moment, what is it like in this moment to be me? What's going on within me? And if you're not going to make it up, you're going to be present and aware to your body, to your mind, to your thoughts, to your mind state, your feeling states. You're going to be aware of your body-mind, and that's where you're going to get so-called data from. How am I right now? Just take a moment and see, is that hard or easy for you? You know, very honest, you don't have, nobody's going to check in on you. How am I right now? What's going on inside me? What's the feeling tone within me? Is there ease? Is there tension? Comfort, discomfort. Sadness, anger, resentment, fear, anxiety, you know, the usual afflictions. You know, what's it like to be me right now? You might ask yourself, is this an experience that's very familiar to me? Or is this kind of new for me? I usually don't stop and just be present to myself and ask myself, what's going on within me? That's your own authenticity. We need to know ourselves. We need, you know, the truth of our own being, you know. Many of us in life, we play social roles, all kinds of roles we play, all kinds of ways we show up in life. But do we know the person who's playing all the roles? This is what Thich Nhat Hanh is revealing to us. And am I truly able to be open to all of me? And again, usually we don't have a problem with the parts of ourselves that we like or that we want people to see. But are we really present to those other parts of ourselves? He says, the snakes, the phantoms, and other unsavory creatures. Are we willing to acknowledge that those live within us too? So then he goes on. If you were told that you had only 2 days to live, you might panic, unprepared to deal with such news. Or suppose your beloved tells you he or she doesn't love you anymore, that they're in love with somebody else. You might be unprepared to cope. So he's giving us a little challenge, right? Just saying. Okay. So just close your eyes. Let's just see what we do with this one. If you were told that you only have 2 days to live, if who's ever really close to you in your life or relationship that you have with a intimate partner or a close friend, and all of a sudden they told you, I don't want to be with you anymore. Would your world fall apart? Would you just be totally devastated? If you were told you only had 2 days to live, would it throw you into a panic? Or you could ask yourself other kinds of, you know, significant questions. And he's obviously picking topics that are, you know, really cut right to us, to places where we're most attached, to life, to our bodies, to people, relationships. If you're told that you only have 2 days to live, you might panic unprepared to deal with such news. Suppose your beloved tells you she doesn't love you, or he doesn't love you anymore, that they're in love with somebody else. Would you be prepared to cope? Maybe just, I'm not going to ask for people to raise their hands, but just inside yourself, ask yourself that. Wow, could I cope with that? Would my world be so rocked? Would I just be devastated? So again, another kind of personal reflection. Maybe you have a job you love. What if you came in tomorrow and they said, you're fired? Or we're laying you off. He says, you are not prepared for these possibilities because you have refused to consider them. We do not like to think about things we find frightening or disturbing, so we pretend they don't exist. But if we ask ourselves rationally, is it within the realm of possibility that we could have something going on in our body and we go to see the doctor and they tell us we have some kind of incurable condition and only have a very short time to live? Is that within the realm of possibilities? Yeah. If it hasn't happened to us, we know it's happened to others. Is it within the realm of possibilities that relationships that are very close, somebody could decide all of a sudden they want out? Is that within the realm of possibility? Is all of a sudden, you know, coming in on Monday morning and finding you've been laid off or you've been fired or something like that, is that within the realm of possibility? So rationally we say, oh yeah, I get it. But the emotional response doesn't come from our rational mind, does it? It comes from someplace deeper. And he says one simple way to deal with that is, you know, to end this bifurcation where we just shut out all the unwanted things in life and try to hold on to all the wanted things in life. Sort of denying the reality that everything is impermanent, everything is subject to change, and in truth, we don't know what's going to happen. Is anybody perfectly sure right now they know exactly how their life is going to unfold from now to their very natural, peaceful death when they're very old? Is anybody actually kind of very clear on how it's going to unfold? Could lots of things happen between now and then? Yes. Are we prepared? Emotionally, are we prepared? Are we able to say, yeah, I can deal with the joys of life and I can deal with the sufferings of life. I can deal with things when they work out the way I want, and I can deal with things when they don't work out the way I want. Why is that? Because I know myself. I know how to be present to myself. I know how to take care of myself. I know how to stay grounded in life. I mean, don't feel bad if you're not there yet. As I'm listening to myself, I go, yeah, I don't want you to feel bad. This is why we practice, okay? I mean, you know, this is why we go on this path, so we can reach that place of groundedness and surety and stability that we can face life with equanimity, we call it. We do not like to think about things we find frightening and disturbing, so we pretend they don't exist. But if we invite our fears to present themselves and are able to smile at them, wow, things will take care of themselves. And then he says, but that is not easy to do. Okay? But that gives you a sense of what the practice is. You know, when we do, we do courses here on death, and at other times, death and dying. And in a very traditional Buddhist practice, traditionally more for the monastic community, but also lay people do it, is we practice dying. You know, we kind of, you know, lay down on the floor and just imagine in your mind you're dying. You imagine that your body is getting numb. You say goodbye to everybody you're close to in this life. You take leave of them. You take leave of your body. You take leave of everything that you have wished for and hoped for, all your possessions, all your things, all your ideas, all your future thinking. You practice dying and finding that place of equanimity. So why do we do that? We're practicing. So when the actual moment comes, we're familiar with the process. We're not blindsided. You know, it's like, oh no, death is natural. It's going to happen to all of us. Why don't I just prepare for it? So when it happens, I'm not thrown. It's just, oh, here it, you know, it's like, here it is. You know, as we say, you know, death is the only sure thing in life. How it's going to happen, when it's going to happen, that's unknown. But, you know, we're all going to get there. Everybody we know is going to get there. Right? Republicans and Democrats, they're going to get there. Nobody goes on forever. So anyhow, so learning to invite up these so-called phantoms, things like that from within, learning how to be aware of them, to be present to them, and how to take care of them is very much something we practice in our tradition. The best medicine, this is now coming back. The best medicine to chase away the heart's dark isolation is to make direct contact with life's suffering. we find that there's darkness in our heart. That darkness is what? There's a heaviness in our heart, a darkness in our heart, or there's kind of an aloneness in our hearts, you know. Do we like that feeling? Anybody like that feeling? No. We'll do anything we can not to feel that. It's like keep it at the fringes, but yet it's there. Much healthier to bring it front and center in our awareness and bring it up and look at it. What is it? What is it that weighs on my heart? You see? And learning how to take care of it and transform it is our practice. A couple of interesting lines, and then I take some questions. He says, I just pull out these little sentences. Without fierce resolve and a mature spiritual life, private demons cannot be controlled. So there's a reason to develop a spiritual life. There's a reason to develop a meditative life. Right? Not so we can just enjoy walking in the garden. Not so just we can enjoy taking a shower mindfully and drinking tea mindfully with friends, even though that's nice and a great benefit. We want to be free. That's the essential quality of a spiritual path. We want to be free. And what do we want to be free of? The tyranny of these things inside us that control us, that disturb us, right? And don't allow us to function and be in this life with ease and openness, peace, good-heartedness. So it's interesting, without a fierce resolve. Now, he's young. Fierce resolve, you know. He's in his 30s, this is all very new for him. And if you read the book, you'll see he's got that energy. Fierce resolve, mature spiritual life, private demons cannot be controlled. Yeah. So, you know, what's the fierce resolve? The fierce resolve is, I want to transform. I want to heal. I want to change. I don't want to be controlled. I want to be free. So, you know, how strong is our resolution? You know, many of us, we think it sounds good, but our resolve is not strong. You know what I'm saying? It's just another thing on our to-do list. And usually we never get there because we're too busy taking care of what? Well, all the daily life kind of things. That's what's high on our to-do list. But where is to be free? Where is that on our to-do list? To be happy, to be free of suffering. Where is that on our to-do list, you see? And these are questions we need to reflect on. So he says, without a fierce resolve, which, you know, fierce is kind of fierce. We can just say with the strong, you know, it's like, yeah, this is very important to me. Everybody sitting here, there have been things in your life that have been important to you and you've put energy into them. Right? I mean, we all know how to do that. Whether it's career or relationship or a hobby or sports or working, you know, whatever it is, we know that when we, you know, put our attention to something, right, and we have a resolve that there's something we want to accomplish here, we all can do that. Everybody, and again, these are not extraordinary abilities. It's just that we usually don't put that kind of resolve and energy into our own personal transformation. That's what we never thought about. And that brings us to having a mature spiritual life. And then I'll read one more thing. When icy winter comes, it is unforgiving to all things young, tender, and insecure. One must grow beyond youthful uncertainty to survive. Maturity and determination are necessary. Seeing the courageous, solid way that trees prepare for winter, we We don't see that much in Florida, but we've probably heard about winter and snow and cold. Seeing the courageous, solid way that trees prepare for winter helps me appreciate the lessons I've learned. And so again, he's again saying, you know, when the icy winter comes, when the challenge comes, things that are young and tender and insecure often get wiped out, don't they? In the cold breath of winter. Right? But the tree that has roots, that has stability and maturity, will survive, won't it? In the same way, in our life, we are blown about. Sometimes we're blown in the way that everything's working and it's good and it's easy. But then, you know, the icy winds come at times and we're blown the other way, right? We all know that, right, in life. And, you know, is there some kind of central stability and rootedness and groundedness within ourselves? You know, a certain degree of stability and maturity and knowing that allows us to just move like the tree, you know. If you've ever been up north, had to endure winter, you know what happens after the winter passes and spring comes. All of a sudden, what? What? Yeah, all of a sudden, these trees all of a sudden begin to sprout green leaves, right? Why? Because their central aliveness was never harmed by the winter. Just the outer leaves, right? The tender leaves. They were blown away, but the centrality of the aliveness of that plant was not disturbed. You see, that's again, he's encouraging us to know ourselves and cultivate that inward strength that comes from just knowing who we are clearly. Ties in with what he was saying last week. Well, I have a few more, but they're all good. Maybe we'll do it again when I'm back again. Any questions? Let's just open things up. What does all this mean to you? You've been hearing this and listening. What's running through your minds or any questions? People at home can virtually raise their virtual hand. Brent will call on them in the hall. Just raise your hand and Danny will bring you the mic.
So I've recently had a family member that was super close to me that passed away. Mm-hmm. And so this is the first time with my practice that I've really been able to express the sorrow and also remain steadfast.
Yes.
And my desire to, or my wish for that person to be free. And so the discomfort, of course, comes up. It's like, can be very, very uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, it's fine for me to be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So anyway, I just wanted to express how grateful I am for this practice. Mm-hmm. And it enables in my life for me to be there for others.
Yeah. So that's exactly right. So some people think, oh, you know, it's like, you know, you become kind of this disinterested rock. You know, that's it. You know, you have no feelings. You're just, you know, you're equanimous because you're just like a rock, you know? Like, no, but it's not like that. You see, it's more like what you said. You have your groundedness, your knowing, right? So not only your groundedness by knowing yourself, but also you understand, you know, the cycle of life. And that death is natural. And I'm not sure of the circumstance of your sister, but for many people, you know, because oftentimes when people die, they're at a certain stage where there's suffering in their body, and you know what I mean? And in a certain way, it's a release. And yet at the same time, you had a relationship with your sister, and you loved her, and there's just a natural missing, right? There's a natural sadness, and that's just part of the flow of being a human being. And so you can have a full range of emotions, but you're not swept away. That's very important. You're not swept away. On either side, you know, some people are swept away by the joys. They just want to hold on to the joys and milk the joys. Hold on to that feeling, right? And again, you know, that doesn't last either. So learning to be able to move through life, the joys, the sorrows, you know, as I often say, anybody ever been present to a birth or just hear about somebody you know having a baby? How do you feel? Happy and joyful, right? Birth, happy, right? Funerals, yeah, we feel sad. We can feel happy too for different reasons, but yeah. But there's, you know, because there's loss. We're happy with gain. We're sad with loss. That's just the way it is. You know, the ability just to be, to move through that with freedom. There's that word again, freedom. Not being attached, not being thrown, not being ambushed, understanding, yeah, there's a rhythm to life. There's gain and there's loss. There's success and there's failure. There's birth and there's death. And they're all just part of the unfolding of life. So we stay, we have a ground to move through life, very important. Yes, somebody else? And again, Brent, if there's anybody online, just hold up your hand and I'll. Okay.
Fred, thank you for bringing Thich Nhat Hanh words alive and his wonderful teachings. You know, it's good to think about this contrast between authenticity and persona, how we present ourselves. But since we live in relationship, could you speak a little bit more about the process of regulating authenticity without becoming inauthentic?
See, this is Americans. We right away see we're looking for the problem, right? But anyhow, I understand what you're saying. And again, you know, the fact that you talked about authenticity and persona knows that these concepts that Tai is talking about, but it's a very deep way, is not unknown in Western psychology, philosophy. Yeah, like, you know, the real me, authentically. So I would say is, the most important thing, let's say for you, Alex, is to know yourself. Okay? That's what he's talking about. Right? To know yourself, to know who you really are, what you're really feeling, what your truths are. Okay. And that takes an inwardness. That takes an ability to step back from all these relationships and conditioning and childhoods, you know, and all the social stuff, and just, you know, who am I? What do I really feel and think? And to hear that authentic voice within yourself, not all the voices of everybody else, right, is a process. It takes a certain degree of stillness and, you know, giving yourself the time. Which again, people don't do, you know, we're always rushing around, you know, just giving yourself the time, but, you know, what am I really, just like we did here, you know, what's really going on with me? What's with me? So to me, that is what we're talking about here. What you're talking about is part two. Now, what do I do with this? You see, but I wouldn't go to part two unless I get part one. I mean, that's what's most important, you know, because anyhow, I mean, it's, So that's, you know, when we enter the world, then we that's very, you know, how do I want to enter the world? Do I want to just be myself and let it all hang out? And if they like me, they don't like me, they want to be with me, they don't want to be with me, they're hurt, they're not hurt, I don't care. I just want to be myself. Anybody who kind of was around in the 70s probably heard that one. You know, just just be yourself and express yourself and everybody, you know. Yeah, so that's, for me, that's not appropriate. But you could do it. Right? People may not want to be around you, but, you know. But you could, but that's me. You know, some people like that, right? That's just me. Yeah, I'm just a mean old SOB. That's just me, you know. Right, so that's the skillfulness. But the important thing is that you know who you are, right? Because if you think about relationships, which I think you're talking about, you know, the problem is there's somebody else. And who they truly are may be different than who you truly are. See, that's the problem. It's not like when we, you know, each of us is we're on our own personal journey, right, of discovering who we are. But everybody else is also entitled to their own personal journey, right? And who they are may be different than who you are. And then in relationship, depending on the circumstances, right? Like work. That's one of our big relationships, right? Can you just be yourself, say whatever you want, do whatever you want, work when you feel like working, not work when you don't feel like working, say whatever you want to say? Is that the way it is at work? How long do you think it'd last? Right? Yeah, so, but on the other hand, depending on who you are, you might go, yeah, I can't really work in these circumstances. Right? They're just too, you know, not me. See, that's our choice. That's knowing who we are. Right? Now, if we're able to work it that we can, you know, find that place, you know, where we can be more ourselves, well, that's wonderful. But it's not always possible, right? Same way in relationships. So I think there, you know, I think we have to, in the same way we want to know ourselves and be able to authentically, as much as we can, especially in personal relationships, friendships, show up authentically as we are, and even at work to show up authentically as we are. But yet we, you know, we're careful, we're discerning, right? But yet we don't feel like we're totally, you know, turning ourselves into a chameleon. You know, some people like, you know, a chameleon, you know, takes on the color or whatever it is, you know, but doesn't know who it is, you know. I don't know, did I answer your question? So, yeah, so I think that's important. I mean, there's no, you know, it's interesting, like with Thich Nhat Hanh, you know, and I met him in Paris in the 70s, so it was maybe 10 years after this real, or more, this initial kind of, because his last entry here is 66. Most of it is 62 to 63, and then there's an entry in 66. So I met him in 75, and he was still very much living out that freedom that he was here. But as we see, you know, as the decades went on and he became a very well-known teacher, he really kind of much more returned to a very prescribed role of how he had to be, because he had lots of students and a world figure and all that. So, you know, he had to go through his own journey and accept it the way his life unfolded. But again, anyhow. Anybody online? No? So who else in the hall? Yes? No? Yeah. Your question.
Okay, I'm going to have a birthday on Friday the 13th.
Mm-hmm.
I've quit working, so I'm retired, and it seems to be a big change in my life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't have to get up in the morning, mm-hmm. which is weird. I can watch TV all night if I want to. But it's like this new person is here or this different person is here and I have to get to know her.
Mm-hmm.
There's less money
mm-hmm.
because I'm not making the salary.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been confusing, wonderful, yeah. delicious, horrible,
mm-hmm.
but it's like I'm meeting this new person,
yeah.
me. And what would you tell, what would be your advice to me?
Well, I would say, I don't think I'd say anything different than I've been saying, which is, yeah, this is exactly it. So, you know, you're at that place because of this, you know, retiring situation, which is not unknown. People, when they retire, and especially people who've totally identified themselves with their role as, you know, whatever their work was and, you know, blah, blah, and how people saw them and, you know, all of a sudden, yeah, who am I? You know, people in families, you know, it's called the empty nest syndrome. All of a sudden, your kids have grown up and, you know, like, who am I? You know, because you've been playing all these roles, right? And so this can either be devastating, or what a lot of people do is, what do? They just throw themselves into busyness. I mean, that's what we do in our culture. Just get busy. I'm going to go volunteer. I'm going to go this. I'm going to play golf. I'm going to, you know, we just throw ourselves into busyness because we're not comfortable knowing, you know, spending the time to know who I really am under the roles. Yeah, so, you know, that's it. Explore, you know, explore your freedom and be aware how uncomfortable it is to you. See, to me, that's wonderful. It's like, wow, this is strange. You know, people talk about, wow, one day I'm going to retire, I'm not going to go to work anymore, how wonderful it's going to be, right? We think that. And then we get there and we go, oh my God, this is scary. Like, you know, what am I going to do today, right? You know? See, I don't have to get up at, you know what I mean? I don't think, you know. Yeah, so it's, you know, freedom is frightening for many people. Right?
Yes.
Yeah, so.
And you don't eat everything in your house.
Exactly right.